This is the Unconquered Podcast. Unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
We're back to some basics. Consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples, football analyst at NoleDigest.com. Today on the show, we're going to have a conversation with Hale McGranahan from CUTigers.com about the upcoming Clemson game. He's going to fill us in on things from the Clemson angle. And then after that, we're going to have a conversation with Jeff Vogt from NoleDigest.com, and he's going to fill us in a little bit on what he thinks about the upcoming matchup in the Clemson game. So without further ado, let's move on to segment one, where we'll talk with Hale McGranahan.
I want you to hit me as hard as you can.
Okay, we are now joined on the program by Hale McGranahan from CUTigers.com. Thanks for joining us, Hale. Pretty big one coming up.
Certainly is. It's probably the biggest Clemson-Florida State game in the history of the rivalry. Certainly the biggest game that Clemson's had since the Georgia game, and maybe the biggest game in Death Valley history. So yeah, it's going to be a big one.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I think you could make a very strong case that this is probably the biggest game in ACC history, let alone in Clemson, Florida State history, although I think a lot of Florida State fans might cringe at calling it a rivalry. I'm not sure that Florida State fans are quite ready to say it's that at this point, but yeah, it's fast becoming that with the way that they've traded home fields of late. Just to kick it right off, what exactly are you hearing from inside the Clemson program coming into here? And can you preview a little bit of what sort of the Clemson side is expecting coming into this game?
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of funny. The running theme around the Clemson program for the last year or two, when players and coaches are speaking with media, they talk about nameless, faceless opponents. They kind of use that during the week when they're preparing, whether they're playing a lesser opponent like South Carolina State, for example. They refer to those kind of games as nameless, faceless opponents. And they even say that with bigger games like the Georgias and the Florida States. And it's been kind of different in this week. And to where they're still kind of mentioning that, they're acknowledging that, yeah, this is a really, really big game, even during Dabo Swinney's teleconference on Sunday night. He said this is a huge dang game. So when the head coach is acknowledging just how big of a game this is, that tends to tell you that, yeah, they're embracing that this being probably the biggest game in a long time in the ACC, if not ever, one of the biggest games in the history of the program and all that stuff. So it's one of those things where they're really excited about playing in such a marquee game and looking forward to the opportunity that comes with playing against a program like Florida State that's in the position where they are now, and with Clemson being where they are now, they're just really excited about having this opportunity on Saturday night.
So just getting into some of the matchups in the game, I think it's pretty obvious that the Clemson defense, which gave up 49 points in Tallahassee last year, is a very, very different team this year from what Florida State fans remember sort of running around through and over, especially in the second half last year. Can you take us through a little bit about what changes have really been observed? I mean, obviously they're in the second year of Venable's system, and that helps. But what other changes have really contributed to the improvement on defense, and where are there still some concerns?
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned Florida State running in through and around Clemson like they did last year, particularly in the second half, because yesterday during Swinney's press conference, he mentioned that he had to turn off the film of last year's game just because it sickened him so much watching Florida State run all over his defense like they did. But probably the biggest change from last year to this year is the strength up front on the line. I mean, it's pretty much the same guys. They lost one guy, Malachi Goodman, who's with the Falcons now. But they've got all these guys back who are a year older, a year more experienced, and that's probably the biggest change that we've seen from the defense this year. They're just so much better. Pass rush is light years ahead of where it was at this time last year, or really at any point last year, probably. led by Vic Beasley. He's got like 9 sacks, leads the country. Corey Crawford, the other defensive end, starts on the other side of him, is making some noise in pass rush situations. Grady Jarrett, defensive tackle, he's just playing incredible football right now. He doesn't really get a lot of attention from a national perspective like Beasley's starting to get with all his sacks. He's played a big part in that. So, yeah, the defensive line it's got to start up there. Like with any team, people say it starts up front. So that's the biggest key, I think. A lot of people probably think that it's allowed Clemson to be better this year. Linebacker play has been pretty good as well. Spencer Shirley, Stephon Anthony are leading the team in tackles, and I think most folks could agree that when the defense has its two best linebackers leading the team in tackles, that's usually a sign of good things. So, yeah, those guys are playing really well, too, right now. And then there's a secondary, and that's kind of been the weakness for Clemson, not only this year, but in the last year or so. They're young at safety and experienced. The two guys that are starting there, Travis Blanks at free and Robert Smith at strong, hadn't started a game at safety until the Georgia game. So there's some concerns there. I think there still are some concerns. The cornerback, those guys are getting better, it seems. They haven't really been tested, I would say, this season. They did play Georgia, obviously, in the first game. But Georgia isn't nearly as good at wide receiver, in my opinion, as Florida State is.
And certainly didn't hurt that they lost their best receiver in the first quarter. So
yeah, absolutely. And so they're going to be tested as far as getting looks downfield in the vertical passing game, because, as you said, when Georgia lost their best receiver, it kind of put an end to that for Clemson's cornerbacks being tested vertically. So it's going to be really interesting to see how they handle that group at Florida State with Green and Kelvin Benjamin and all those guys, because, my opinion, that might be the best core for receivers in the ACC. I might have said it with Clemson before the season started, but with some of the injuries they've had, and they're not really deep, Clemson's receivers, I would probably say Florida State is either 1 or 1A, the best receiving core in the conference. So it helps that Clemson's cornerbacks get to go against those guys in practice every week, every day in practice. But we haven't really seen them get tested when the lights are on and when it actually counts. So it'll be interesting to see how those guys handle that.
So one other question that I have in terms of the secondary, and I haven't really paid quite enough attention to really be fully knowledgeable on this, is in terms of the nickel corner that, and how Clemson looks at the nickel corner position, because I think that's going to be a really important spot in this game, with the way that, especially that Kenny Shaw, Florida State's third wide receiver, has looked so far. How does Clemson look at that third corner spot, and how are they, when they go to those nickel packages and things, which we should see a lot in this particular game, how comfortable do they feel with that third cover guy?
I think they feel pretty good about it, because the third cover guy in those nickel situations is usually Martin Jenkins, and he's not a real big guy. He's probably about 5'9", in the 160s, 170 range, but he might be their best just pure cover guy. So from that standpoint, it may not be that bad of a matchup for Clemson, because he's probably their best pure cover guy. I would be more concerned from a Clemson perspective just what might happen on the outside, just because that could be the biggest issue, I think, for Clemson's defense. Outside of James Winston being able to just make plays when things break down and improvise and do all that kind of stuff.
So let's turn it over to the offense just a little bit. You'd mentioned some of the attrition that Clemson's had sort of from the beginning of the year. Obviously, the Sherrone Peake loss is just a huge one, as he was really one of the better receivers, not only on the Clemson roster, but I think in the conference. And so that's a big loss. And then obviously coming into this year, you'd already lost DeAndre Hopkins. You'd already lost Ford. You'd already lost Ellington. And some of these other players who'd been so important to what Clemson did last year and why they were so explosive on offense, And I think one thing that, that I'm really curious to see coming into this game is, especially now that now with Peak out, and you've got essentially there were five guys around around Taj Boyd last year. There was one that that made that offense so explosive. And now four of those five guys are not going to be on the field. The other obviously being Sammy Watkins. Four of those five guys helping to draw some of that attention away from Sammy. Are now not on the field. So can you talk about sort of what Clemson has, you know, in reserve in terms of what else they can do there, and sort of address what we can expect from this offense given all of those losses from last year to this year.
One guy that you did not mention, someone who's gone from last year's team, is Jerron Brown, wide receiver, who he didn't make a ton of plays. Downfield, not many explosive plays. He was probably the safety blanket for Boyd on third down. I can't remember the numbers off the top of my head, but
yeah, 21 catches for 345, averaged about 16.
Yeah, and out of those 21 catches, I would say that about half of them converted third downs. I mean, that was a pretty big part of Clemson's success last year, is Boyd being able to rely on him. And I think there's, you've seen a little bit of issues on third down with Clemson this year. They're, 48th in the country in converting on third down. So, yeah, that's played into it all. Of course, with Hopkins gone to the NFL as well, and Alexander and Brandon Ford gone, that's taken away from what Clemson's been able to do in terms of just being as explosive as they've been in the past on offense. Obviously, you mentioned Watkins being the guy. Adam Humphries has really come on, and he's played significantly in his first two seasons, and now in his third season this year, he's playing even more and making even more of an impact. So I would say he's probably behind Watkins, number two receiver. And Mark Davis Bryant, who's been a little inconsistent at times this year, but he's every bit as talented as Watkins, believe it or not. And so there's some pieces in place, and Mike Williams being another one, a freshman receiver. There's some pieces there. They're just kind of coming along a little slower than I think most people outside of the program, whether it's media or fans, they've anticipated or really thought. But it's coming along, and it'll be interesting to see how some of those complementary pieces are worked on Saturday night against Florida State.
Yeah, one position that I really felt would be a weak point, especially after Sam Cooper hurt his knee in the spring. One of the reasons that Morris's offense the past couple of years has been so difficult to defend, I've felt, has been having those elite tight ends. Last year, of course, it was Brandon Ford. The prior year, you had Dwayne Allen. You know, you've had some really, really good tight ends who not only were really elite players in the passing game, especially on third down. I mean, I can't remember how many times. I couldn't count how many times Brandon Ford or Dwayne Allen in the last couple of years, again, on third down, you know, you could go to those guys and get those mismatches. But they were also very good blockers in the running game. So far this year, from what I can tell, they've sort of put Sekinger at the receiver position, or the receiver at the tight end position a little bit. Can you talk a little bit about sort of how they've been handling that sort of that absence of the kind of tight end threat that they've had, in particular in the running game? I know that Clemson's not run the ball quite as well this year, and I figure that's probably a big factor. Sort of where is that from the Clemson angle?
Yeah, I think you're right. The lack of having a healthy, bigger tight end, I think that's kind of hurt in the run game. Sekinger, as you mentioned, they converted him to tight end last year. They recruited him as a receiver and played receiver for his first year and a half or so. So he's still learning the position. He's only about 235, 240 right now. He's learning the position. He's trying to get more acclimated from a physical standpoint to play the position. And Cooper, coming off that ACL surgery, it was, 5 months ago that he had the surgery. So he's still... I still think he's come along in the regards of being able to be strong enough and sure enough, confident enough in that knee to where he can really block and make a positive impact from that perspective. So as far as the position as a whole, it's been kind of a by committee approach. And as you mentioned earlier, it hasn't really matched the level that we've seen the last few years at Clemson with Brandon Ford, Dwayne Allen, and dating back to even before Morris was at Clemson with guy Michael Palmer, who's bounced around the NFL for a few years. So I think that's been part of, I don't want to call it an issue. I'll say an issue for lack of a better word, part of the issue that we've seen with Clemson's offense not being as explosive as it's been in the past.
All right. Well, you know, obviously, I think that's a big reason why, frankly, I expect Florida State to win this game, just putting my cards on the table, in part because I don't feel like the Clemson offense is quite what they were last year. As good as they were against Georgia, I think we found out that Georgia's defense still has some issues of their own. But, you know, obviously, I'm coming from a different camp here. So what's your feeling on how this game plays out?
I think it's kind of an unknown right now because, yeah, Jameis Winston's been really good in his first five games. We haven't seen him get tested in the kind of environment he's going to step into Saturday night. And, yeah, he seems like a cool, calm, collected guy out there on the field. But he also hasn't played a defense, I would say, hasn't faced a defense that's as good as Clemson to this point. So when you put that together with the kind of environment he's going to be playing in, there's just some unknowns with how he's going to react, how he's going to play, all that kind of stuff. So I think that's the biggest unknown right now, just how Winston's going to handle all that stuff. And I think he's going to fold and collapse under the pressure, because quite frankly, I don't think he will. From what I've seen, I think he's a pretty darn good quarterback, and he seems to be, as I said earlier, cool, calm, and collected. But really, we won't know how he'll handle that stuff until it all starts happening. So that's probably going to dictate how it plays out, what the result is. So at this point, I'll say I'm going to pick Clemson. That's what I said before the season. And why I said I would pick Clemson before the season is because they're playing at home. And as we all know, the home team has won this game the last, decade or so. So while, you know, a lot of these guys weren't on some of these recent teams or none of these guys were on the teams 10 years ago, I'm just going to kind of stick to the trend and say that Clemson wins because they've got that home field advantage.
It is awfully hard to pick against Taj Boyd in Death Valley. That's for sure. Now, of course, again, I'm looking back at last year and looking at the South Carolina game in Death Valley, and I'm going, well, you know, the Florida State defense this year, you know, it's starting to show that it may have that kind of South Carolina defensive performance in it, which, you know, that's one of the interesting things is I'm actually expecting this game to be a little lower scoring than anybody else seems to expect. I think the team that scores over 30, 31 points probably wins this game, but especially, you know, I'm not sure what the weather is going to be like, but you know, I think we may see a little more defensive matchup than anybody expects because these are two very, very good defenses.
I tend to agree with you. And as you said, team that gets in the 30s will probably win the game. And, you know, that hasn't always been the case with Clemson teams saying, oh, well, they just got to score 30 points and they'll win. Because last few years, it's like, all right, well, they need to score 40 points to feel comfortable about saying they're going to win. So, as you're saying, I think this will be a more of a defensive game than a lot of people are anticipating. So, yeah, I'm with you on that.
All right. Well, thanks to Hale McGranahan. Thank you very much for joining us on the show today. And I'm really looking forward to getting to experience one of the best game day atmospheres in college football on Saturday. And it certainly will be one of the best game day atmospheres probably of anywhere over the next year. So I'm very much looking forward to this.
I'm too. It should be a fun one, and I hope we've got a fun and exciting game to watch on Saturday night.
That was Hale McGranahan from CUTigers.com. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back with segment two, where we're going to talk with Jeff Vogt from NoleDigest.com. We're joined now on the program by Jeff Vogt, the publisher and recruiting analyst at NoleDigest.com. Jeff, glad to have you with us.
Fantastic to be here. Big week this week.
Yeah, it is a big week. Biggest game in the ACC, and probably ever in the ACC.
I would agree with that, absolutely. Certainly the biggest game for Florida State in a number of years in terms of this is everything for them. All of the goals become attainable with a win this week, and a lot of those goals may not be attainable with a loss this week.
Yeah, no doubt. So let's just jump right in. I've already been pretty forthcoming that I actually think Florida State actually matches up very, very well with Clemson coming into this. I'm much more concerned moving forward about Florida. I think Florida is the team on the schedule that best matches up with Florida State. And I might be more concerned with Miami right now even than Clemson, just in terms of the way the matchups stack up. What are your thoughts on in terms of how this game looks?
Well, first I want to say this is a great Clemson football team. And nobody can take that away from them, win or lose on Saturday night. This is a great Clemson football team. This is a team that they've been building towards for a couple of years now. This is Boyd's money year. This is Sammy Watkins' money year. They seem to have rebuilt the defense where it's at least now nationally average or a little bit better. And so this is going to be a stern test for Florida State. I am not sold on the fact that this is a great football team, that this is a nationally great football team. I'm not willing to go there yet with Clemson. I've been following college football since Clemson won their national title in 1981. And it's been a long time between, 1981 and now of many good Clemson teams that haven't been able to get over the hump and do it. So I am a little bit skeptical on just how good this Clemson team is, and I am 100% sold on Florida State being a great team. So when we look at the matchups of this, I don't think that anybody can stop Florida State. And I certainly do not think that the Clemson defense is going to stop Florida State. I expect the Florida State offense to perform very similarly to how they have performed in the first five games this year against Pitt, so forth, right on through the schedule. Somewhere between 35 and 50 points this weekend. On the flip side, even though Clemson has a very strong offense, I do believe that Florida State can slow them down. I do believe that Florida State is going to have some success against them. The main question is, do you want to take Sammy out of the game and then let some other people hurt you? Or do you perhaps want to take out some of those other people and let Sammy do his thing and, he's going to get his yards. He's going to do what he's going to do. They do not have a running game to be scared of, and they do not really have a second receiving option that Florida State really needs to be concerned about at this point. The loss of Sherrone Peak, that hurt them. It hurt them bad. That's their number two wide receiver. It slides somebody like Martavis Bryant back to three or four, where anything you get out of him is a positive. As it currently stands, he's an immensely talented kid who doesn't always bring it every week. You just don't know what he's going to give you. He should probably show up on Saturday night against Florida State. I would probably bet on him having a reasonable game Saturday night, but you can't count on him. And anytime you can't count on somebody, you simply don't know what's going to happen. So I'm anticipating Florida State getting somewhere in the neighborhood of 42, 45 points and maybe holding Clemson somewhere in the low 20s by the end of the night.
While we are on the same page, because my projected score right now, I've got Florida State 41-20. I think Clemson's going to have a hard time scoring over 24 points in that area. I don't think they hit 30.
I would agree with that.
And the game that the couple games that I'm looking at to sort of think about that. I mean, you look at last year's Clemson offense to me was much, much, much better than this year's Clemson offense. I don't think there's any questioning that. I mean,
I 100% agree. You have just Andre Ellington. Miss Andre Ellington.
Well, not even just Andre Ellington. I mean, you're looking last year, they had Andre Ellington. They had Ford. They had Brandon Ford. They had Sherrone Peak. And then they had Nuke Hopkins, who was the best receiver on that team last year. I mean, as good as Sammy is, and Sammy's great, Hopkins was the best player on that team last year and actually put up the best metrics, the best statistics. He was statistically the best player on third and long, the best receiver on third and long that we've seen in the last 10 years in college football. And, you know, that you don't just replace that with the guys that they have now. I mean, if Sherrone Peak had been healthy for this game, I'm a little bit more concerned. But when you're losing the other four playmakers around Taj Boyd, other than Sammy, I mean, you've got five playmakers around Boyd last year. You're down to one compared to that this year. Now, Bryant, I think Bryant is capable of being a guy on the level of some of those guys from last year. But either way, you're not dealing with sort of the wealth of pick your poison that you were last year. And last year, that South Carolina defense went into Death Valley and held them to 17 points. So, you know, and I'm not sure, and they were running a five defensive back scheme, very much like what Florida State's going to be running this year in terms of what Pruitt does when Florida State goes into that nickel and dime package. You know, when you're looking at what Florida State's doing, it's going to be very similar to what they've got. And Florida State, I think, has the comparable edge in terms of defensive line versus Clemson's offensive line to what South Carolina had last year. So, you know, you look at, they struggled to 17 points at home against that South Carolina defense last year. And I'm not sure I don't see the same thing happening this year, especially without all those weapons.
It's one of those situations where football can be a strange game, you know, and if you do have a defense that stops, like they, for the most part, Clemson goes out and plays football on Saturdays. They have their way offensively. You know, they may struggle on a series or two. They may have a turnover. Something, but at the end of the day, they end up getting their 35-plus points, and they score, and they end up winning the game. But then you finally see a defense that can stop them. You finally see a defense that gets them off the field on third and four. And things fall apart quickly sometimes in those situations. I'm not saying that's going to happen completely, but I do believe Florida State's going to get them off the field enough in this football game to win handily, I believe, at the end of the day. I do not see it in reverse. I have seen no signs that Winston is going – the game's too big for him. He's not going to play well on the road. He's a freshman. I mean, these are just excuses from people who don't know what they're talking about, if you ask me.
And if you listen to any of the interview with Winston today, if you saw any of the conversation that he had with the media today, you see why people bring that up. Because the questions that were asked – I mean, they were asking him about the point spread – about, you know, about the history of this series going back to 2001. And he's looking at people like, I have no idea what you're talking about. I mean, they have no idea how all this stuff works from a player's perspective. I mean, they're assuming that, well, you know, since this team hasn't won in Death Valley in their last six trips, I mean, what does that do for you? And he just kind of looked at the person like, what? I don't know. What difference does it make? I wasn't on those teams.
Right.
I mean, it's like they have no idea how this works as a player. Yes, Death Valley is a tough place to play. I mean, it's one of the loudest stadiums in the country. But one of the things that I remember from Death Valley a couple of years ago and a couple of years prior to that, even though Florida State lost those games, one of the things that's interesting about a Clemson crowd versus, say, a Florida crowd is Florida is, you know, at UF, it is loud all the time. I mean, no matter what, they are loud when you are on offense. At Clemson, what was interesting is when Florida State kind of got rolling a couple times there, the crowd, you can feel the fear in the Clemson crowd. That crowd actually almost becomes a liability for them because you can feel that crowd kind of turn a little bit and start to get afraid, start to get nervous, and then you know you have them. Now, it didn't work out for Florida State in either of those trips. But I kind of took note of that, of this crowd sounds scared. And you know, you notice that. That's the sort of thing, when you go to the sideline, you notice, and you start smelling blood, and you start seeing that come over to the other team.
So, for lack of a better term, they are Clemson fans. You know, and they have been put through some torture, you know, over the years, and they have had to watch a number of games where they shouldn't be confident. But the point is well made. There's a reason, you know, going into the swamp is a very difficult thing to do and win football games. And if you look at Clemson's home record over the long term, over the last 30 years, it's hardly something to be that frightened about. Plenty of teams have walked into Death Valley and won. Plenty.
Yeah, most of that, though, boils down to, you know, the better team tends to win even on the road. The better team wins more often than not. So, you know, it's the whole thing I've tried to tell people about Lane Stadium. The reason Virginia Tech was so good at home for so long is not because Lane Stadium is such a terrifying place to play. It's actually not that loud. It's because Virginia Tech was really, really good for a long time. Yeah. And, you know, when you're better than the teams that you're playing at home, more often than not, you're going to win those games. But, you know, looking also at the LSU game last year that really sort of propelled Clemson into the spotlight for this year. Now, yes, that was played without Sammy. That was played without Watkins. LSU held Clemson to 4.45 yards per play in that game and 25 points, of which, you know, they got that kick at the horn. But basically, they're looking at 22 points through, you know, all but the last couple seconds of the fourth quarter. 25 points, if Clemson only scores 25 points on this Florida State team, I have no doubt that Florida State wins that game. I just don't see them holding Florida State under 30. And I don't see them, you know, this is where, I mean, I know people are going to hear this and they're going to say, wow, they're homers. But, you know, wait until Florida week and wait until you hear, you know, hear what I think we're both going to be saying then. I just don't see it this week.
To touch on that subject, on what we touched on a little bit in the beginning, you know, I want to give a little bit of credit towards Miami for that game with Florida State, because Florida State has played Miami the last 2 years. They have been the much more talented team in both of those games against Miami. A lot bigger gap than there will be this year between the two teams in terms of talent. And Miami has played very hard, has made Florida State not play very good football games against them the last couple of years. And Florida State has gotten out with a win that was kind of testy 2 years ago in Tallahassee with a couple bad calls there down the stretch. I mean, guys were getting ejected left and right. Miami seemed to get a bunch of flags go their way. But at the end of the day, they had the ball in Florida State territory with a chance to take the lead late in the fourth quarter. So Miami seems like, under Al Golden, they have that Florida State game circled every year. That is how they're going to try to, quote-unquote, get back, is to beat Florida State at this stage in the game. So I am a little bit concerned with that game, even though I think Florida State would project to be, what do you think, 12-point favorite at this point, 14-point favorite?
I think somewhere in there, probably 12, somewhere in there, because I don't know that they're going to be comfortable putting them up higher than that. But you know, and the thing that actually, I think, turning to that one just briefly, looking down the road, the thing that is concerning about about Miami is that you bring up those last couple of years. Florida State statistically dominated those 2 years. They statistically dominated. Only the scoreboard was a lot closer than everything else. And anytime you're playing against, you're playing in that situation where, you know, you're actually, you know, you're statistically winning the game. I mean, last year especially, they statistically just dominated Miami. But Miami just kept hanging around. And that seems to be the kind of character of Al Golden's teams. And, you know, they're a team that can actually, to me, the weakness of this Florida State team so far this year has been at the linebacker position against your power stuff. So your power O, your counter, your true power running game stuff, some inside zone stuff. Basically, where you can try to get bodies, force Telvin Smith to play downhill and take on a guard, force Christian Jones to play with instincts inside, and force those guys to make tackles, force the defensive front to be less aggressive and to play gap control against that kind of power set. That's where I think Florida State's been vulnerable so far, and I think you saw that against Boston College. That's what they did, and they had success with it. And you saw
and
a little bit of
Florida
it.
The Florida game is where Florida State's going to see that ground and pound system in the swamp, where Muschamp definitely wants to muck the game up as much as possible. And Florida State could be very uncomfortable in that type of game with Florida down the line. Now, the question with Florida is, it's so far down the line that they have a tough road just to get to that Florida State game this year. And at some point, this thing could really go south for them quickly, because we're both familiar with the Florida attitude, the prospects that come from Florida. You know, they're ready to go when the game's on the line and when there's something to play for. But as soon as you take that away from them, you sometimes get very average effort.
You get Louisville in the Sugar Bowl.
Yes, yes.
And you know, but the thing is, Miami also can pound you like that. They can line up with a couple tight ends, and they can run that power O. They can put a fullback in the backfield, run that power O, run that counter stuff, and run downhill at you and force you to really man up and play in the, you know, play heavy in the box. And FSU has not been comfortable doing that so far this year. And that would, if Clemson could do that, that would be concerning. To me, this defense, though, is designed. I mean, in terms of personnel, you stick Christian Jones out on the edge in a 3-3-5 set, and you bring Terrence Smith out there, and you're dealing with five defensive backs. Well, I mean, you're going to put five defensive backs out there who are all going to be drafted in the first three rounds.
Yeah.
And all of whom can cover one-on-one, where, you know, at Clemson, what they want to do is they want to get their second or third receiver on your second or third cover guy, because they think that guy's going to be better than your second or third cover guy. But is he going to be better than PJ Williams or Darby or Joyner or Ramsey? So, you know, this is where I think that the matchup is just not, to me, when I look at this game, I just don't see the matchups going in Clemson's favor. Whereas I'm much more concerned when I look at Miami's offensive line and their ability to pound it with Duke Johnson. You know, he's not a big back, but he runs hard, and he's got guys in front of him who are big and will force you to take on blocks and that sort of thing, and to not run around blocks and that sort of, that's a dangerous thing. I just don't see Clemson being able to do that.
In a lot of ways, Duke is similar to Devonta Freeman in the sense that they kind of get what they're supposed to get most of the time. Duke just has a little more big playability, a little more escapability to do that. But on the 7-yard runs, you're right. Duke does a good job of getting 7 yards.
Yeah, Duke is actually, to me, he's a lot like Chris Thompson was in that sense, where he's going to get you his 5, 6, 7 yards because he makes his proper reads. But then if you let him have that 7, he might take 80.
Yeah, happens all the time with him. And the second thing we haven't talked about is Taj Boyd, okay? There's a lot of hype with Taj Boyd, a lot of NFL draft hype with Taj Boyd being a potential first-round draft pick. I'm not ready to put him in that class yet. You know, I mean, I think he's a little bit of a system quarterback so far. I haven't seen that many big-time throws from him. And I think he's going to need to make some of those throws this weekend for Clemson to win that game. Now, if Clemson can get, if Florida State wants to come out like they did against Pittsburgh and a couple of these other teams and, you know, pretty much right off the first quarter in terms of offensive production, Clemson can get up 14, 17, 21, nothing in that time frame, you know, because they're going to script their plays. If they do a particularly good job with that, they can get Florida State, you know, in the right defense to take advantage maybe early in the football game. That's a bad situation for Florida State, and that's really the only way, in my mind, that this thing goes south for Florida State, is they get down, and there's just simply not enough time to come back against a good football team.
Well, you better bet that Jimbo Fisher all week has been telling them, you know, guys, we're going to have to weather the storm. We're going to have to weather the storm. You know, those early minutes, it's important that we come out and match their intensity. I mean, you know, the two of us by now, we can sit there and play Jimbo bingo and, you know, whatever catchphrases, whatever coach speak he's going to put out there. But, I mean, a lot of it's true in this case. Where, you know, that's what they're going to have to do. That first 5 to 10 minutes of the game, you know, the first part of the first quarter, I think if Florida State comes out of that without having given up, you know, a bad turnover or, you know, a couple situations where suddenly they're down 14 to nothing because, you know, Clemson managed to script the right stuff or whatever, you know, a couple, you know, guy falls down or Winston happens to throw two interceptions or something early on. As long as that doesn't happen, and, you know, that's the thing. It is football. That stuff does happen. And Clemson is capable of beating Florida State. But I think it's going to take that to beat Florida State in this game. And if that doesn't happen, I think by the time we get to the end of the third quarter, there's going to be a lot of eyeballs on the Notre Dame-USC game, which will be more competitive.
Yes. We actually don't want that, to be honest. You know, we want those eyeballs on the TV this week. The ACC doesn't have many opportunities like this. Florida State needs, you know, street cred nationally. This will go a long way for Florida State in that department with a win. It'll go a real long way for Clemson as well if they win. So you know, let's make it competitive and then blow them out in the second half. You know, and that might be the best scenario. I'm sorry, everybody. I have the hiccups right now. I'm doing the best I can.
So let's take one more. We haven't been able to chat thanks to a house fire that took care of some of the studio stuff up here. But we ought to talk a little bit about sort of what's going on in recruiting right now. It's sort of that slow point in the season. But you know what? Let's wrap up by talking a little bit about what's going on sort of in the recruiting world for Florida State, and you know, you can bring us up to speed a little bit on where we are, and especially since, you know, through the first half of the year, Winston obviously has, you know, his, the way he's looked and the way the offense has looked and all of this is bound to have caught the eye of a few recruits, and you know, I would expect that FSU is probably trying to get in on a few guys that maybe weren't as interested earlier on but might be now. So why don't you catch us up a little bit on recruiting before we wrap this segment, and then we'll get ready for the game on Saturday.
Yes. Well, they've been unlucky so far in the sense that haven't had a big name home opponent to draw people to town, to draw prospects to town. They've kind of had the kids come to town who you would expect. A lot of the commitments who live in Jacksonville, Panhandle, somewhat close. Those are the guys who have really been in town thus far. I can tell you that this off week was used as the staff to find offensive linemen, and no stone was unturned. Literally, if they went to a school and that school said, hey, down the road, this team has an offensive lineman you need to look at, Florida State went into that school and saw him last week. They used that time wisely. I talked to a number of high school coaches that had Florida State come in, and they said, I mean, that was what Florida State coaches were talking about, offensive linemen. So we haven't had a lot of news filter on just who they liked, you know, from this big net that they're casting. But now we can clearly confirm that that's exactly what they're doing right now in terms of closing. Wide receiver is a second position that they showed some more interest. They went into Charlotte to look at the twins, see how their grades are going, Dwight and Dwayne Reynolds. They checked up down in Miami on Tyree Brady. They checked in on Stanley Clairvaux. Obviously, we're with JoJo down there. So that seems to be maybe a second spot that they're really concerned about right now. We know that all of four of the commitments aren't necessarily 100% solid at this point in time. They do have the numbers right now. But they're taking visits. It seems to be kind of a mutual thing where they're together right now. We'll see what happens down the road with a couple of these guys going forward. What is interesting is they were not necessarily looking for running backs. Now, that would be something that Florida State fans would kind of be like, huh? What? Don't they need to land two more running backs in this class? Don't they got to bring in a fullback-type body? Don't they have to really be looking for that big-time kid? I would say yes. That's exactly what they should be doing. The word on the street seems to be that James Wilder is gone for sure. And believe it or not, I've heard Devonta Freeman is at least thinking about it. And, there's always Carlos risk, you know, going on despite anything that he does production wise, this year, just because he's going to be so good physically, at the NFL combine.
And who knows what he's going to do in these last few weeks, because, I mean, I think coming into this next game, I think we're going to see him used liberally against Clemson as somebody that can potentially put the game away late.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, this could be the breakout party for him. In fact, if you ask me, I think Florida State has kind of hit him so far to a certain degree, maybe for this week.
I felt that way myself. I think there's some stuff that they've sort of hinted that they've got for him, but they've hidden him. And I think we're going to see a lot of him, especially in the third quarter in this next game,
yeah.
but probably some in the first half, but they're going to want to get their, you know, second quarter and then, you know, sort of late third quarter when you're getting defenses a little bit tired in the legs. I expect to see a lot of Carlos there.
Yeah. And on that topic, not to get away from recruiting, that's Jimbo's MO. Every coach keeps a book, you know, on other coaches and so forth. And we all know Jimbo likes to come out throwing the football, and then we're going to run the ball in the second half. May want to break that tendency, you know, this week a little bit, because in my mind, that may be 25% of the slow starts for Florida State this year, is that teams are kind of expecting that to kind of happen. With Florida State, and maybe a little more ready for that, because I think, in my opinion, I don't have the numbers in front of me, I'm not looking at anything, but That's my impression of what Florida State does. Come out, throw the ball, and then try to run the ball a little more in the second half. We'll see what happens this weekend on that topic. So anyway, back on to recruiting. Those seem to be, you know, during the season, I think recruiting takes a major backseat across the board. It takes a backseat for the coaches. It should take a backseat for the fans. I mean, the only reason why we pay attention to recruiting is so we can win football games. And so, you know, you have the talent in place for the team to win football games. Well, we're in the part of the year where the job is to win football games going on right now. And, yeah, you know, 2015 kids come into town. That's good to get them on campus. It's good to get them in front of the coaches. Good to get a commitment out of one every now and then. But we all know this game, you know, these early commitments aren't really worth much at this stage of the game. Florida State for the 2014 class is in excellent shape at, you know, 7 out of 9 positions. The offensive line is the major issue going forward. I'm confident that Trickett's going to find the players. I mean, Ragnow looks like maybe the second most likely of the big name offensive tackles to maybe jump on board. I still feel good about Johnson in Missouri coming on board. I've never felt good about Damian Prince. I'm never going to feel good about Damian Prince. I don't think Damian Prince is coming to Florida State. I don't think there's much interest there. You're not going to find me talking about him. Everybody can throw eggs at my face when he signs with Florida State and tell me I'm a jerk. I'll listen to it then. But until that happens, flow with GV on this and just say that there's not a lot of positive indication out there that we have a great chance there.
What is it that you always say? Watch what they do, not what they say, I believe.
Yes, and I've watched him go to Maryland 5 times in the last 2 months. Okay, not all those visits are reported, but he's been there on campus. So, and you know what? Maryland's turned it around this year. They're going into the Big Ten. You know what? If Florida State was in Maryland's shoes and the kid was in the backyard, everybody from Florida State would be like, of course he's coming to Florida State. You know, why would he go anywhere else type of a deal? So we've loaded up on the defensive line. DeMarcus Christmas having a fantastic season. Jacob Pugh having a really breakout fantastic season.
He's a freak.
He may be the headliner above Kane Dobb at this point. You know, I mean, in fact, I'm pretty sure that he is the linebacker. Yep. So now Kane Dobb has his place because Florida State kind of needs that middle linebacker type, you know, that he's going to be. He's reminds me a little bit of an old school kind of Florida State guy in that regard. So the kids are having good seasons. Cosentino's having a good season. You know, Vickers has been healthy thus far, showing a little more juice this year. So everything positive on those. Getting the second tight end was huge this year. I mean, Christo Cortzidis has to be kicking himself right about now because I can't imagine he's not playing significant snaps for Florida State this year. And maybe not significant, but enough to keep him happy if he had decided to stick it out here this year. So they got that second tight end into the class. That was big, particularly because Izzo is a type who can come in and maybe help a little bit earlier than the first commit, who I think is a little more raw but has a little more upside down the road.
And we've all seen that Winston is much more willing to throw the football to those guys over the middle of the field and to use that tight end as a weapon in the middle of the field than sort of what we've seen from the last couple guys in that position.
I mean, I think he's been willing to throw it just in general to a lot more people, a lot more on time, everything's just so much crisper. I mean, there's no other real way to say it. I mean, the rhythm that he throws in, the way the ball gets there, where the ball gets played. I mean, everything is just different. And that's not a knock on EJ or Christian. They are who they are, you know, at the end of the day. But he's clearly superior in a number of areas, you know, to what either one of them did at Florida State.
Well, I thought Christian in 2009 played about as well in this offense as you could play, and boy, have I been corrected on that, because there was apparently a whole lot more ceiling to reach in terms of what you could do from the quarterback position in this offense. Because boy, he played great in 2009 up until he hurt his shoulder. Wow, Winston is just so far has surpassed that by quite a bit.
The hard part for Florida State fans is going to be the next guy. you know, the next guy at quarterback. And, you know, let's hope it's Coker in year 5 because I don't think production would drop off that far.
Yeah, I don't think Coker's going to be around here.
I think I've heard a number of people talk about, you know, he's graduating in the spring, go right into Alabama and start next year. I mean, you're going to tell the kid that he shouldn't do that? No, I can't honestly tell him he shouldn't do that if that's the situation. I don't know exactly who Alabama has on that roster. Nothing's ever given to anybody.
They don't have Jacob Coker on that roster, and I think that's what matters. So, I mean.
Yeah. And that's just a scenario that, you know what? I mean, and to touch on Miami, Miami has worked that waiver wire with Al Golden better than anybody else in the country. I mean, they're getting production from fifth-year senior transfers that graduated. Granted, it's only one-year production. It doesn't help you long-term, doesn't clear up any depth chart issues. But he filled in a couple of guys that were really necessary for Miami's success this year, and he got them, with this graduation rule that's going on. It's something that I might not mind seeing Jimbo get a little more active with here going forward. The problem is Florida State just doesn't have those holes to fill. It's a much more talented roster.
It's a real
roster.
Tough problem to have.
Yeah. I mean, it's just different in that regard, particularly where Golden's done it as on a defensive line, not real impact guys, but guys who have played at the high Division I level and are at least average to a little bit above average players. They didn't have that before. So anytime you upgrade something like that, you improve as a team. I guess there would be a case in a year that Florida State could find an offensive lineman. I mean, we saw Florida kind of bring in a couple of transfers. They're both playing for them on the offensive line this year. They really needed it. They missed on the offensive line for a number of years going forward. So we'll see what happens with all this. But I think, in general, nothing that's happened this year for Florida State is going to do anything except for help recruiting, not only down the stretch in 2014, but certainly with the 2015 class moving forward. I think, you know, now Brewster's been down in South Florida for 6 months, so he's not a rookie with Florida State. He's going through for the second time. When I've talked with Fish about these types of things, you know, you get in there four or five times as a coach with one school, you start making headway, and it's not such a big drop-off anymore from the guys that were going in down there. So I think that's improving just by with time here going forward. And, they've got about six 2015 quarterbacks that all want to come to Florida State. They're all big-time talents. So I think one of the toughest things going forward, you know, because that's the first spot that will be recruited here in January, February, March, April, is which one of those guys Florida State really
if you were a high school quarterback or a high school quarterback's dad and you had just watched Jimbo Fisher put Christian Ponder and EJ Manuel in the first two-thirds of the first round of the draft back to back after getting Jamarcus Russell drafted first especially watching, you know, with the limitations that they had, Ponder and EJ Manuel going in the first round. If you watch that and then you start seeing Winston, is there anybody else that you would want your kid to play for above Jimbo Fisher as a quarterback?
The resume is getting quite good. Quite honestly, it was a major upset with Manuel and Ponder, I think in both cases going in the first round. But they did go in the first round. They both started it's too early on Manuel. He's had his ups and downs so far this year. Ponder seems to be, you know, really getting a little bit of heat right now in Minnesota. But he'll get another opportunity elsewhere if it goes south.
And the fact is, when you look at how Castle played this last week, it's starting to look like it may not be the quarterback position there.
That's right.
Which, you know, if you've been watching that offense at all, that's kind of been obvious. But it may take. I mean, it may be the best thing for his career to sit there on the sideline and not get hurt for a little while. And let Castle and Freeman show that, this is not a Christian Ponder problem. This is a Vikings organization and a Vikings offense problem. But either way, I mean, you're right that it was still an upset for him to go as high as he did. It was an upset for EJ to go as high as he did. But those are on the resume.
Yeah, and I thought Ponder at the NFL level could have really used at least 1 year of no contact, maybe even 2 years of no contact. Just to get everything healthy.
I completely agree with that.
I think he's just one of those guys. You know, another guy who's kind of like that is actually Sammy Watkins. He's such a thoroughbred, type athlete that he gets nicked up a little more than most. You'll often see him mid-game, kind of limping around or anything. The last touchdown against Syracuse, I mean, he looked seriously hurt in the game when he was running away from the defense. And it's just the way some guys are. Ponder's one of those guys who just kind of gets nicked up a little bit. Sometimes you just got to get all those things out and start fresh again to do it. But we'll see what happens. Certainly, I agree 100%. At this point in time, quarterback-wise, Florida State is it. I think Cosentino saw that, jumped on it, you know, and obviously Treon Harris wants to get a shot. And I, of course, when I mentioned 2015, I forgot that we already have a commitment from DeAndre Johnson at quarterback, but I would expect them probably to be taking a second quarterback as well, just because these kids' talent is such that they're going to have to take one of these guys, especially because a lot of them want in. I don't know who that's going to be yet at this time.
Nice to be able to be choosy. But anyway, Jeff, let's try to put let's put a number. What are you expecting this weekend? Let's put a score down and an odds of outcome here.
I think it's 45-24 Florida State, and I'm going to give them a 70% chance to win.
All right, and that's pretty close to where I'm going to be as well. I've got 41-20, and I'm actually putting it at about 75% as well. So I think we're in the same ballpark here. Well, Jeff, thanks for joining us, and we will now wrap up shortly. But should be a really fun one to watch this weekend.
Thank you.
That was Jeff Vogt from NoLDigest.com. So one last thing before we go about sort of how Florida State and Clemson will match up here, and I think an important thing to note is that Clemson had some success against Georgia defensively, in part because Georgia really wanted to run the football a lot on first and second down, and Clemson was especially once Gurley went out for a while with an injury, Clemson was able to limit them some in the running game on first and second down, and then. You know, sort of tee off a little bit once they got to longer yarded situations. That's when Vic Beasley comes onto the field and things like that. They were able to get some pressure on Aaron Murray and force some throws that were not quite as accurate as what you might want. And I think that made a big difference. One thing that I think is going to be different in this game, is that Jimbo Fisher is going to go out of his way to throw the football on those running downs or on those neutral downs. The way he likes to do it is he likes to protect that quarterback by throwing on first down, throwing on second down, and five, throwing in situations where the defense has to honor the run rather than getting stuck throwing the football on third and long. I think if you get to third and long, I think you're actually going to see Fisher run the football a little bit more in this game to sort of counteract that and maybe get a play from one of his backs when Clemson's not trying to stop the run. So what I think you're going to see is you're going to see Fisher throw the football, especially early on first down, and not try so much to force the running game the way that Clemson was able to, or that Georgia did, and instead of getting in situations where they're, you know, second and 10, third, and then all of a sudden third and 10 or third and long, I think Fisher is going to do his best to avoid that by throwing early, throwing on first down when Beasley's not even on the field and their pass rush is minimized because of down and distance. And then, you know, if it's second and 10, if there is an incomplete pass or if there is a situation there, then I think that's actually when you're going to see Fisher run the football a little more, to try to set up, you know, third and five or, you know, something like that, third and six or third and four, somewhere in there instead of third and 10. So again, trying to force a little bit more of a neutral down setting. I mean, he's really big on leverage, in play calling. And so I think that's a sort of an under analyzed aspect of this game that I think is going to again have some impact in how successful the Clemson defense can be against this Florida State offense. And it's one of the few places where I think play calling is really going to matter in the way that this game is going to shake out. That I don't think you're going to see Fisher try to force the running game and potentially put his quarterback in longer yarded situations because of Clemson stopping the running game on first and second down. Instead, I think you're going to see, again, throw when they aren't rushing the passer quite as much, when they're trying to stop the run, and then run when it is a longer yardage situation and keep the quarterback protected. All right, that'll do it for this episode. Special thanks to our guests, Hale McGranahan from CUTigers.com, and of course, Jeff Vogt from NoLDigest.com. Keep visiting NoLDigest.com for the very best in Florida State football coverage and analysis. For the rest of the NoLDigest staff, I'm Jason Staples signing off. We'll talk to you soon. I made this.